Do you want to become a better songwriter? Well, we created a very simple 10-minute songwriter personality test, and it's going to help you better understand who you are as a writer, and it's going to help you in the writer's room when you're writing with other writers, because you're going to be able to identify what kind of writer they are. Maybe even have them take the songwriter personality test. If you're curious and you want to take the songwriter personality test today, just visit songwriterpersonalitytest.com or go to the link on the writingworship.co website.
Welcome to the Writing Worship Podcast, a place for kingdom-minded songwriters to grow in their craft and community.
This is the Writing Worship Podcast. I am your host, Eric Nordhoff, and I'm solo today. Nick Morrow and Rachel Thomas, who you normally hear on the podcast, are not with us, but that's because I just finished a conversation with Chris Hauser. Chris is a legend in Christian music. He has been a promoter for 36 years in the industry. And long before that, he was involved as a programmer and as a DJ in Christian music. And we talk about all kinds of things on this podcast. So I'm not going to talk for real long, but if you're at all curious about some behind the scenes stories of some of the top radio hits of Christian music in the last 36 years, Chris has them. He tells some amazing stories. He is a storyteller and he is a professional promoter. This man loves to hype things up, but you know what? You can't, it's so addictive. It's a transfer of passion. They say that sales is a transfer of passion, and that's what Chris does. He transfers the passion onto me, so much so that before we went live, he was telling me about this concert that was coming up at the Ryman. And by the time he was done and by the time he left, I went ahead and bought two tickets to this concert, and I can't wait to go to it. So Chris is always promoting, but he's so sincere about it. He's real. And that's what I love about him. I had a chance to work with Chris for a year or so at Warner Brothers, Warner Alliance. We talk about that in this episode. We talk about his years at Warner Alliance. We talk about some origin stories, some of the very first worship songs that he ever promoted on radio. And it's going to blow your mind. I had goosebumps several times when he was telling these stories. And as I was listening to Chris tell these stories, I couldn't help but realize how much he influenced the church. What he was involved in, radio impacts what gets played on a Sunday morning. And I asked him about that. How does it feel to know that you have changed lives and impacted people far beyond in way, and God has used you in ways that you probably couldn't even imagine? And I loved hearing his answer to that. Very humble man. So if you're at all interested, if you've been listening to Christian music or Christian radio over the last 30 years, you're going to identify with some of these stories and you're going to love Chris. He's an absolute legend in not only the Christian music industry, but also because of the impact that he's made on probably millions and millions of lives. I'm not kidding, around the world in the church. So here it is, my conversation with Chris Hauser. I cannot believe this is, you are one of my bucket list guests that I've been wanting to have over to my house.
I appreciate it.
So a little background for the listener. You and I have worked together.
Uh-huh. When you were a pup.
A wee little lad, 23 years old is when I met you. And so it's 28 years ago.
Yeah.
We worked together.
Yes.
And I still remember, it's the only job that I cried when I got laid off. I sobbed on March 5th, 1990.
Black Wednesday.
Seven.
Man. Yep.
Black Wednesday. We worked together at Warner Alliance. And it was some of the best experience that I've ever had in the music industry. And I don't think we'll ever kind of relive that special time.
Right.
Late 90s, music was still rising.
Yeah.
And CDs were still selling. And
yeah,
it was a big business back then. Yeah. So, Chris, we could start a number of different ways, but I wanted to kind of introduce people to you.
Uh-huh.
You have a 40 plus year experience in radio promotions.
Yeah.
In Christian music. You are an encyclopedia of Christian music.
Rain Man.
You are the Rain Man of Christian music. And so tell me how you got your start, where you, the roots for you, even spiritually, mm-hmm. growing up in upstate New York.
Right.
Start there.
I was born in upstate New York near Binghamton. And lived in a small town called Deposit. It, whatever joke comes to mind, I've heard them all. So I need no Deposit jokes in this moment or I'll walk out of here.
Okay. All right. That's a threat.
And I grew up loving music. I remember my dad loved records. And I remember growing up listening to Beatles, Crosby, Stills, Nash, getting Warner Brothers Lost Leader records. Now, these were box sets of 2, 3, and 4 album sets at $1 a piece. And they were compilation records. And they were a compilation of all the projects that were coming out. Mm-hmm. And I would lay on the floor between the big speakers in our living room, and I would read the liner notes and read these stories about all these artists, mm-hmm. Deep Purple and Black Sabbath and all this music that was happening in the late 60s, early 70s. I grew up in the church, grew up in a Methodist church, so not evangelical, but Godspell was very important to me. Jesus Christ Superstar was very important to me. I knew nothing about Christian music in the early 70s. I was born in 1960, mm-hmm. so I was a young teen in the Jesus movement, per se. Mm-hmm. I was not around it, but I became a Christian in 1976, May 8th.
Do you remember? So you remember the date?
Yeah.
Do you remember where you were?
I was at a little country church on the edge of town, not to quote, well, I am quoting Love Song, but that is a Love Song song called Little Country Church. And I am not kidding you. It was a hymn sing. There was a revival going on in our high school, mm-hmm. small little town, small high school. There was a revival going on and a girl that I had a crush on invited me out to the hymn sing.
It's always a girl with that you have a crush on.
And the dude who was leading it had an accordion. He was playing an accordion, old gospel songs. I went forward at the altar call at this thing. And I was going to go high. I was going to go high on pot. And my best friend warned me to not do that because they might trick me into something. Don't go high. Don't go drunk. They might trick you into something.
Right. And then you might doubt your decision, right? That's crazy.
That was May 8th, 1976.
How old were you then?
I was 15 years old.
15 years old.
I struggled a little bit because of the friendship groups that I was in. But when I went to college in 1978 in Syracuse, just a little community college radio,
right?
TV communications.
They had that at the
in Syracuse
community college?
At a community college, radio, TV, communications. And it was basically like 13th grade, kind of 14th grade. I mean, it was very, very, I was not a good student.
Uh-huh.
I was a drummer in school. I was musically inclined. My dad took me to 6 years of private drum lessons every week from like 7th grade to 11th grade. I was really, really good. But I didn't have a good head for music theory, so I chose not to go on to music school.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I went to college for radio TV, because I loved music, I wanted to be around music. This is the closest I could get without being stuck in a music degree program. And I met Christians, crazy Christians, who loved Jesus and had Christian rock music mm-hmm. in the fall of 1978. So they introduced me to Larry Norman, Randy Stonehill, Resurrection Band, Dallas Holm, all these records, I had no idea. I had no clue what this was.
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah. 78, what distribution vehicles did we have?
Right.
Probably didn't even know what the local radio station that even played. Was right. there a local radio station?
Eventually, I found CBN Radio, uh-huh. which was in upstate New York. And they had satellite towers all over upstate New York.
Mm-hmm.
So I found that in Syracuse and started to listen to that. But the music informed my faith. I grew in my faith. I grew in the fellowship with these guys.
Yeah.
And it was a real growth experience for me in those 2 years in college. In my second year of college, I got a job at the local Christian radio station in Syracuse, WYRD. Say it phonetically, weird radio. and it was a crappy little radio station.
In a trailer, right?
Or something? Eventually it was in a trailer.
Okay.
We ended up in a double wide trailer in an area that would become a swamp when it rained too hard. But this is where I became the program director at that radio station. We acquired an FM station from CBN. So it was an AM FM combo. And the highlight of my week began when record companies began calling me, working their records to me in the early 80s. It was highlight of my week.
That's crazy. That's crazy to think about. And then you obviously became one.
Yes.
But so you and I, if I could relate to you for a minute.
Of course.
So about 12 years later, I was in Ithaca, New York.
Yes.
Going to college, studying radio, television at the Roy H. Park School of Communications with David Muir, who is now the host of World News Tonight.
Okay.
From Syracuse.
Huh.
Also Syracuse lad as well. I don't know if you didn't know that?
News to me.
Anyway, David and I competed and he beat me out. And so my radio career... my radio and television career, but I was a DJ on the local radio station and tried my hand at TV. That's why I'm doing this podcast. That's why it planted the seeds. And when I was a kid, I had my own little radio station that I hosted and recorded on tapes as well. So you and I fell in love with music as well. I didn't listen to any Christian music either. It wasn't until I was 23 that I accepted Christ and kind of started walking with him. But Christian music, you know, going into the Logos or Logos bookstore
In Ithaca.
In Ithaca, New York.
Yes.
And I would listen to records you were promoting.
I think I know the guy who ran that store.
I bet.
I think I somehow knew him.
Mm-hmm.
And I would come down to concerts in the 80s there in Ithaca, and the Lovin' community was there in Freeville, which Phil Keggy came out of, Phil Madeira came out of.
I didn't know that.
That was a Christian commune from the early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And it's where Lynn Nichols, who ended up an A&R legend in our industry, he was in the Phil Keggy band on the Emerging album, 1975.
Wow.
Also out of Lovin' came a record called Courts of the King, which was the Lovin' company. And some of the best, coolest 70s hippie worship in our industry came out of Lovin'.
Really?
Right there, right up the road from
That's
you.
Crazy. And yeah. I didn't even know that, you know, because it was such a, I only got exposed in college and the city is incredibly liberal.
Yeah, yeah. Diverse.
Diverse. Let's just put it that way. And so I never got exposed to it, but I had my pockets like of people who planted seeds in me.
Yep.
Over the years. And then I started getting introduced to Christian music when Amy Grant crossed over and Michael W. Smith crossed over and kind of the pop artists. And then I would listen to Trace Ballin or Balin and Wayne Watson.
Yep.
You know, and Cindy Morgan and whoever else was out of the gray was huge for us.
That's like 91.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So those were my college years, 89 to 93.
Okay.
So yeah, you were in the music industry. But so back to, okay, you're in college. Or running the radio station after college or your second year.
Yep.
Tell me where you go from there.
Yeah. The highlight of my, through the 80s, from 83 to 87, highlight of my week was getting calls from record companies. There were no promo tours. No one was doing promo tours. No one was bringing artists to radio stations.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember some of those early calls, like some of those guys that would call?
Absolutely.
And what companies were calling you?
Word out of Waco, Murr out of LA, Benson out of Nashville, Sparrow out of Canoga Park, California. There were a couple of independents that were out there doing the work as well. And I loved all of it. I loved being on the receiving end of those phone calls. Although I had bad experiences with some record companies and kind of tucked that away because the longer I went there at that radio station in Syracuse, I was like, I want to be in that job. I want that job. That's the one. This is where I want to go.
Because you would make note of some things that weren't good.
Yeah, that made me feel small, made me feel little, and made me feel ashamed or, you know, because there's a sales aspect to being a promoter. And so it was helpful for me to live those years and experience the highs and the lows. Mm-hmm. In 83, our radio station won a Angels contest around an Amy Grant record called Straight Ahead. The debut single was Angels. Mm-hmm. It's the green, red light.
I love it.
Green, yellow, red light, yep, on the
my
cover.
My wife has her CCM cover with that.
Ah, there you go.
On it.
So our radio station won a contest where a winner, a listener, a guest, and the radio PD from that radio station would go to California, the city of angels,
oh,
for a free weekend, all expense paid weekend, to see Amy Grant, Michael W. Smith in concert at Universal Amphitheater, get a tour of Universal Studios the next day. And so we get out there on a Friday. Mm-hmm. Our radio station wins. We're That's furthest incredible. From LA that
How did you
get.
Win? What did you
It was just
win?
A drawing. Just
really?
A drawing.
Crazy.
And 50 radio stations took part in it. We were drawn. I go to California. I'm sitting in the front row. Before the show starts, all these kids are lined up in front of me to get autographs from the person next to me. And I'm like, I finally pull one of these kids down and I'm like, who is this next to me? I'm newly married. My wife and I are kind of separatist. We don't even have a TV.
Right.
We're super religious. And the person goes, it's Michael Knight of Knight Rider. I was sitting next to David Hasselhoff.
The German.
At the Amy Grant concert.
Dude.
Who had gotten married that
day. You didn't know who David Hasselhoff was?
No, I did not know the Hoff.
Oh my gosh.
He had gotten married that
day. He's the Hoff now, right?
Yeah. His wife is a huge Amy Grant fan. She says, I'll marry you on that day, but before we go on a honeymoon, I'm taking you to the Amy Grant show. We're sitting in the front row of this Amy Grant show at Universal Amphitheater. I go to the party afterwards. Mm-hmm. I meet tons of people, mm-hmm. Amy and management and all these people. I'm 22 years old.
Yeah. Is that Michael Blanton at the time?
Mike Blanton and Dan Harrell, mm-hmm. and all the label people are there, yeah. and CCM people. And I come home from that weekend and I look my wife in the eye and said, we're going to live in LA someday.
Interesting.
She's like, what? And 4 years later, we moved to Los Angeles and I was hired by Mer Records. Mm-hmm. I was the first person hired out of radio to go work for a record company in our industry. Mm-hmm. So prior to me, the record promoters were kind of glorified college interns, maybe moved over laterally from marketing, but no one had actually been plucked out of radio to come work for a record company.
What was the state of Christian radio at that time? I know John Rivers and uh-huh. Texas was a behemoth.
Yep.
At that time,
yes. right?
Houston and Dallas. I mean,
yeah, there were good radio stations. There were not networks that were massive like we have now. Way FM and K-Love.
Mm-hmm. Or Air One.
Yep, that's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, none of those were around.
It's all independence.
The early version of K-Love was starting in the early 80s. So mm-hmm. they've just celebrated 40 years, but it was just a very early version of it. So, mm-hmm. but yeah, there were monthly charts. Now I can pick up my phone and tell you how the top five are going right now, this moment,
yeah,
because of technology. But back then, we would send our charts in, mm-hmm. physical charts, to the...
Fax them in?
Yeah. No. In 1987...
You mailed them?
Yeah, mailed them. In 1987, I get a job. We move clear across the country with my pregnant wife.
Yeah.
And I call my parents within a week of me landing at Mer Records and I say, Mom and Dad, they've got a machine out here in the office. It's like a huge phone mm-hmm. and you could put a piece of paper in the phone and then make a phone call and that piece of paper comes out in another phone somewhere else in the country. It's called a facsimile machine.
Facsimile.
My parents are like, are you kidding? They'd never heard of anything. I'd never heard of anything like
right,
that.
Right.
That's the fall of 1987.
Oh, that's great stuff.
So I come into my gifting, Eric, in 1987, where I get to call radio stations, and I'm talking about Amy Grant, Russ Taft, The Imperials, eventually Phil Keaggy, Sheila Walsh, Bashin' the Code, eventually Holy Soldier, One Bad Pig, mm-hmm. Philip Bailey from Earth, Wind, and Fire. Mm-hmm. We break a new artist named David Mullen. I work with the choir. Some of the greatest records of all time in CCM history, Lead Me On by Amy Grant, Chase the Kangaroo by the choir, Rust Half, and Rust Half the Way Home all came out in a 3-year period that nice. I got to bring those records to Christian radio.
Yeah. What an honor it was at the time.
Absolutely.
Did you realize it? Or did you?
No.
No.
No. I knew these were amazing records.
You did. Yeah. Yeah.
These were really top-notch, amazing records.
Lead Me On is still one of my favorites. It was one of the ones when I bought Heart in Motion, which is that record sitting right there.
Right.
And then I'd buy earlier records.
Yep.
And they got worse. Some of them got worse in terms of the quality.
Yeah, yeah.
But definitely Lead Me On.
Yeah.
Was epic. Like, I know every song on that record and I could play it over and over and over again, starting with 1974 and going on all the way through. Did that ever single?
Four number one songs.
Yeah. What were the four?
Saved by Love.
Yeah. Love that song.
Lead Me On, title track, 1974. And then What About the Love?
Yeah.
Four number one songs.
Great, great.
And it was an amazing time to be in the record industry. And we had a baby and we found an amazing church. We found a Vineyard church out there, Southern California in Burbank. And it was, and every day it's always sunny in 78.
Yeah, I know.
In Southern California. It's magical out there. And we had the most amazing time. So
yeah, you fit in perfectly. Like, one of the things I've known about you and have admired about you, Chris, is, and I've learned from you, is just the way that you promote. I want to ask you about that because you said something in an interview that I listened to, or maybe it was a blog I read, where you were talking about you never really picked up what other people were doing. You have a very simple approach to the way that you promote music and the way you relate to others.
Mm.
It's not like you always make me, I think you just mentioned something earlier about how you felt ashamed sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You always make me feel like I'm the most important person in the room. But you also find a way to kindly move yourself over to the next person that you also want to talk with.
Right.
But I don't ever feel like you dismiss me or you have this way about it.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's incredible. That's awfully kind.
What's that rooted in? What's your philosophy or your way of being in your work?
I love that you say the way of being, because I would rather be a human being than a human doing.
Mm-hmm.
And presence and accepting the present moment is incredibly important to me. And so when I'm in front of you, then this really needs to be the most important thing, because this is all that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
God is in this moment because God is I am. God is present. Right. And so that's where.
And speaking of God is present, we have a phone call coming in.
I'm looking at your phone like, what's that guy got his phone ringing? No, it's mine. Sorry. So specifically, though, that's also Enneagram. I don't know if you do the Enneagram, but I'm Enneagram 3.
Mm-hmm.
So I love to work a room. I love a crowd. I love to be all over the place and meet as many people as possible. So I've got like six or seven nights in a row of concerts coming up this week.
Do.
And I can't wait. Mm-hmm. I'm so excited to go night after night after night, and then after parties and then afternoon meetings and
Chris.
All that kind of stuff. I'm filled up by it.
Yeah.
I'm filled up.
You're
by
an
it.
E, you know, okay, you're definitely a whatever your Myers-Briggs is.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, but I'm sure it starts with an E.
Yeah.
Because you get filled up.
Can I tell you a quick promo story?
Please. Yeah.
I'm 10 years old, 1970. Being raised somewhat religious, Protestant, my parents take our family to see Godspell in Binghamton, New York. It's on a Friday night, and I'm blown away by this. The rock and roll, the spirituality, the acting, the singing, the dancing. I cannot believe what I've just seen. The next morning, I come bounding out of my house in my small town, and I'm running down the street, and my best friend's mom, Mrs. Thomas, is walking up the street, and I get in front of her and I said, Mrs. Thomas, I've got to tell you about last night. I'm 10. You have got to go see Godspell. And I tell her all about Godspell, and I lay all this on her, and I say, they're doing it again tonight. So you're going, right? I'm 10.
You had it in you.
And she looks at me and she goes, Oh no, Chris, I've got other things going on tonight. I fully expected that my 10-year-old self just sold her on something that moved me so deeply.
Mm-hmm.
So my whole life, it's in my DNA.
Mm-hmm.
It's a gift. I can't get away from it.
Yeah.
When I'm excited about something, especially music, but if it's a movie or a TV show, I'm going to get in front of you and I'm going to try and talk you into loving what is moving me and means something to me right now.
Yeah. I think for you, it's just so childlike. You're playing. You feel like you're playing probably all day long,
yes.
Don't you?
Yeah. Yes. And so after it wound down at Warner Alliance in 1998, so whenever this is heard, it's 25 years ago. 25 years. And you were gone 97.
Yep.
I was gone a year later, late March of 98. When I left Warner Alliance, I had an opportunity to go independent and not just get hired by another company. And so in 25 years, I'm celebrating 25 years of independent promotion and self-employment.
We need to have a big party.
That's a good idea. Who could I get to come play my big party? Anyway, I tell people that I make a great living talking to my friends at radio all day long about music I love. Because I turn down the records I don't love. I turn down the artists that I think are going to be too high maintenance. And I'll let somebody else cut their teeth on that heartache and that misery because I've done it. And there is, as you say, it's childlike. It's play. I have so little stress in my life in a professional way because I make a great living talking to my friends all day long about music I love. And these people, I truly care for these people on the other end of the phone, these radio folks. These truly are my friends. And I take notes, and we can get into eventually how the job works, but I take notes. I pray for people. I speak blessings over people when I know that they're struggling and having a hard time. I bring them back to the present and speak a blessing over them. And so this is decades of relationship that I have with these people, and I care so deeply about them. But it really, I'm 62 years old. I've done this. I'm in my 36th year of doing this job, and I still love it so much. One of the reasons is there's always new music coming. There's always new music from new artists that breaks my heart, that captivates my soul, that captures my imagination. And so I want to bring those things that are moving me, I want to bring them to my radio friends.
Yeah. Well, you do it so well, Chris.
Thank you.
I'm, and one day, maybe I think you're going to start a podcast and I will definitely be a subscriber because I know you have story after story after story. And we could probably do a 2-hour episode, you know, episode just talking about 1/10 of the stories that you've got. But what, like, so from 1990 on, you had a great offer to move over to Warner Alliance.
Yep.
That's a pretty, pretty bold move. I mean, Murr was kind of the kingpin.
Yes.
At the time.
Yes.
And so what led you to go over there?
I had a couple of great raises at Murr, but living in LA was just
tough.
And we were really committed to my wife not working and being home with our baby. And so there was a job that opened at Warner Alliance. And in 1990 at GMA Week, they ruled with the Winans and a song called It's Time video. And it was just this tiny staff of three people, but they had all this Warner Brothers money. And it just, I could not believe. Our word luncheon was hosted by Gerbert, the talking doll. And they had—
Nothing wrong with Gerbert.
Okay, fine. Yes, absolutely. But all anybody could talk about was Warner Alliance in 1990 at GMA Week. It was so massive. And so I found out that they had a job opening in the fall, and it broke my heart to leave Murr. It broke my heart to leave LA, but we really were trying our best to make ends meet. And so I go in and give my notice at Murr. I'd already come to Nashville and did the interview at Warner Alliance. And they said, Chris, we have a new artist that we've been waiting for Brown Bannister to his schedule to free up. We can't explain it. This guy comes from the Southern gospel world, but when he opens his mouth and sings, it's like heaven comes down. His name is Michael English, and we're going to launch Michael English within 2 years. And so I was like, man, I'm all in. I'm all in. And so we got the job. We moved to Nashville. And I always felt like Nashville was probably in my future somewhere.
Yeah.
But I started in radio promotion and then kind of helped oversee publicity and some marketing and eventually became a VP there. And it was, those were really tough years.
Yeah.
There were some really, really hard years that we—
Some challenges.
Yeah.
That was a time from 1990 to 1998. It seemed like Christian music grew up in some ways.
Yes.
Began to get the interest of major record labels,
yes,
with Warner Alliance being one of them.
Yes.
And I think there was this battle. I remember the whole Roaring Lions time.
Uh-huh.
And where
Roaring Lambs.
Roaring Lambs.
Bob Reiner.
Bob Reiner.
Yep.
And just the concept of being a roaring lamb.
Yeah, yeah. Crossover, a light in the dark. Yeah.
Yeah, lighting in the dark, light in the dark. What was that? And Warner Alliance went through quite a bit with Michael English and the controversy with, I'm blanking out in the group, with the member of First Call.
Yes, 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 yes.
And
so much heartbreak. Vince Ebo.
Yeah.
Vince Ebo taking his life after
I don't know much about that story
either. Let him out of his contract. And then being a Warner Brothers company in the 90s was not an easy thing to be, because Madonna put out the Sex Book. There was always some new controversial Van Halen or Prince or Madonna record coming out, mm-hmm, or hardcore rap music. And so people kept coming against any Warner Brothers company. Mm-hmm. Focus on the Family called for boycotts of any Time Warner company, which included Warner Alliance. We were always in the news for all the wrong reasons.
Right.
It was really, really tough.
I never got any of that because I had to call on Focus on the Family for their magazines. I was doing special markets, pretty much bottom of the... I was doing all the international sales. Uh-huh. Anything anybody didn't want, I was the guy. but Focus on the Family was my account. I don't remember them treating me that way, but maybe that was already passed.
I think we were probably passed. They'd beaten us up badly enough.
Yeah.
there was no more beatings to be taken,
right,
to be had.
Yeah.
But in 90, we tried to sign Carmen. Mm-hmm. That didn't work.
Didn't know that.
It's a long, long story, not for here, but it's an incredible story. Mm. And then we moved that whole campaign over to Wayne Watson and got Wayne Watson to sign with us. And we said, Wayne, you'll not only come and make records for us, we're going to let you be an A&R guy and you're going to bring us acts. You're going to bring us music.
Why? Why did you let him do that?
It was the offer that we made to Carmen that he didn't take us up on. But we thought, look, you're a senior statesman in the music industry. You're always out there performing and you have opening acts coming. If there's somebody that you're excited about, we'd love to know about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so he reaches out to us in 95, early 96, and says, there's this band in Houston that has sellout shows every Monday night at a Bible study at Second Baptist, and they're called Caveman's Call. We were like, what? Caveman's Call? They're like, no. Cadman or Cademan was a psalmist in the Middle Ages.
Mm.
And so that's where they got their name from.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had a meeting with Caveman's Call, and they were already down the road making their record.
Mm-hmm.
And we were probably too corporate, and they were too hippie or too unpolished.
Very different.
Yeah, yeah. Very, very different.
Mm-hmm.
But we ended up signing a deal, and in early 97, we launched the Caveman's Call record with a single called Lead of Love.
Mm-hmm.
And there were 33 radio stations that were reporting their charts to the national chart during that time period. And we had 32 of those stations in 1 week say, we're all in on the first week it was available.
Hmm.
It's a record. It's never been touched. That high a percentage comes aboard a new artist with a debut single.
I wish I wasn't I hope I would not want to be the one that didn't pick it up.
They got to it the next week.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Good,
yeah.
Good.
And Caveman's Call, I called them, forgive the language, but I called them a group of flannel-wearing, shoe-gazing, college dropout, pissed-off Calvinists. And most of that is true, but that band came into a world that was ruled by vocal groups, For Him, New Song, Point of Grace,
mm-hmm,
and slick pop music, Stacey Arrico, Jackie Velasquez.
Mm-hmm.
And into this mix comes this folk pop band.
Right.
And it changed their lives and changed our lives.
They were genre changing.
Yes.
In our industry.
Yes.
From that, talk about all the artists that came out of that movement.
Well, they debuted at number one on the Christian SoundScan sales charts. They came in at number one on the Billboard Heat Seekers chart, which is a mainstream chart.
Mm-hmm.
We had four straight number one songs on that record. Lead of Love, Hope to Carry On, the Rich Mullins cover, This World, and Coming Home mm-hmm. in 11 months. We had four number one songs in 11 months on that record, all through 97.
Yeah.
And we had that launch. You were part of it. And then we lost half of our staff on Black Wednesday, as you said, because in 97.
Because of nothing really related to us.
Yes.
It was a Warner Brothers
Yep. It was decision. A Warner Brothers thing. And it was devastating for us emotionally. And yes, you cried. A lot of us cried.
Yeah.
And it was a really, really tough time period. And then by 98, the label was shut down.
Yeah. Yeah. It's too bad. But it was a blessing for you. You certainly started to see, then you became independent.
Yep.
It just was the right time. You never went back. You've been independent ever since.
Yes. And here, let me say this.
Yeah.
So I get let go in March of 98. And within a week, Deborah Evans Price, who writes for Billboard,
yep.
she had a weekly column called Higher Ground. She calls me. She's like, Chris, what's next? And I'm like, thank you so much for calling. It's so kind. I was deeply touched. Mm. She's a friend. I'd been working records to her and talking to her and all that stuff. And I said, well, I don't know what's next. All I can tell you is the cutting edge worship music of Delirious, Kevin Prosh, Daryl Evans, and Waterdeep has changed my life in the last 2 years. We had endured such heartache and heartbreak at that label through the 90s. That those artists were filling me up and giving me a personal revival. And so I said, I don't know what's next, but all I want to do is be a part of moving this music forward in our industry. Spring of 98.
Okay, so this is a great segue into, I think, what our community talks about. And this is maybe where this is the origins of today's worship music.
So let me interrupt by saying a week later, Billboard comes out and I'm the lead story in Deborah Evans Price's article in her weekly column. I thought she was just a friend calling me out of concern.
You didn't even know she was taking
she
notes.
She was interviewing me and she said, this is Chris Hauser's next move.
Oh, wow.
So at Integrity Music in Mobile, Alabama, Danny McGuffey goes running out into the hallway, waving Billboard around, going, Chris Hauser's talking about our records, and we don't even have him on the payroll. Somebody get Chris Hauser on the phone. So Terry Short, who had worked in the early days of Warner Alliance, calls me, says, how fast can you be down here to Mobile? We're launching an artist-centric label called Vertical Music with Daryl Evans, Lincoln Brewster, eventually 10 Shekel Shirt, eventually the Rock and Roll Worship Circus.
Yeah.
And we need help getting these songs on the radio. Can you help us? They fly me to Mobile a week later.
A week later.
And they pick me up. A driver takes me to a studio. I enter a room with Daryl Evans, Lincoln Brewster, Paul Mills, the producer, a couple of label guys, and we track through the Daryl Evans Freedom record from top to bottom. And I'm a complete, utter mess. Trading My Sorrows.
That's what was on that record?
Your Love is Extravagant.
Oh.
You Bless Me. And that's what's on the Freedom record that they're about to launch in the summer of 98. We get to the end of it and they say, can you help us get this on the radio? And I said, I'm going to die trying. And we had a top 10 song and a top 5 song. And those were the first really meaningful and deliberate worship songs played on Christian radio in 98.
There really weren't.
Nope.
So what were they? Trading My Sorrows?
Trading My Sorrows was the third single. So the first single was You Bless Me.
I don't even know how that one goes.
It's a ballad.
Okay.
And then that was the second single. And then the first single was So Good to Me. And that was more up-tempo.
Okay.
That was top 10. You Bless Me was top 5.
Was that because... Oh, sorry. If you were going to finish Trading My Sorrows
was probably like a top 30 song.
Interesting. How did you pick those songs from that record?
Well, I felt like those had the best. We couldn't go in. He'd released a live worship record first called The River or Get in the River or something like that. or Let the River Flow.
Let the River Flow.
Okay, that was it. But that was all congregational, live, lots of audience, you know, all that kind of stuff, long, long songs.
Yeah.
So I knew that we could not do that. Mm-hmm. This was a more compact, really pop-sounding record all together.
Produced.
So, Oh, yeah, yeah. Really, really well produced. And so I felt like I just picked two songs to start that I felt like had the best shot to put this label on the map and put Daryl Evans' name on the map as well with radio.
Wow.
That
was
1998.
That's incredible. So all of this time, that time when you did the interview with Deborah Evans Price, you had been soaking in this worship music.
Yes. Yes.
Which was it called worship music at the time?
Sure was. Yep. And I was a Vineyard guy. We were a Vineyard church planter here in town. And so all the Winds of Worship records were coming out through the 90s. I mean, David Roos and just a number of big time worship leaders that were making really, really great records. Kevin Prosh was among them. And so I was all in that. And then I went to England with the Worldwide Message Tribe in Manchester, and in London at a bookshop, a guy named Ashley gave me a cassette of the Cutting Edge Band.
The
Cutting Edge Band with Did You Feel the Mountains Tremble? And I Could Sing of Your Love Forever. He gave me cassettes of this Cutting Edge Band, which was the early version of Delirious.
Yeah. Martin Smith.
Yep.
And how did that relationship come about then? How did you
With them? I mean, I fell in love with those songs, and those songs started getting played in the Vineyard system and in our church. And then I was introduced to King of Fools by Delirious, and then Live and in the Can in 98 and 99. And so
they were an independent label at the time, too.
Yes,
England.
Right? Out of England, yes.
They weren't signed to...
They signed to Sparrow in 98.
Okay,
they signed to Sparrow. Peter
in
York
the
and Lynn Nichols, yes, went to the big...
Greenbelt?
King of the World? King of...
Festival over there?
Champion of the World was the name because Noel Richards, if that name rings a bell, was at Live Aid in the stadium at Wembley. In 85. Queen is singing We're the Champions of the World. And he said that God dropped in his heart, you will one day be leading worship
in Wembley.
In Wembley. And we will call the event Champion of the World.
Yeah. That
Jesus
I remember this.
Is Champion of the World.
Mm.
And Delirious played at that. And so there was a famous video of them singing Sanctify and live there at Champion of the World.
Yeah.
98.
Powerful. I remember Jonathan Brown, who now runs Integrity, crying when he presented Delirious at one of our Word sales conferences. I mean, you and him together are promo machine. I mean, the two of you, I couldn't handle you both in the same room.
Oh, that's so funny.
But
it changed my life.
Yeah.
All of that changed my life.
Yeah.
In 97, 98.
You became
99.
An independent promoter.
Yep.
And did you promote those records?
I did not.
No.
No, they were Sparrow.
Sparrow
when they signed them, they had their own thing going. Now, I will say this. In the summer of 98, I'm lit up talking about worship music all the time, talking about these artists, Waterdeep, Daryl Evans, Lincoln Brewster.
You managed Waterdeep for a while.
I did manage Waterdeep for 2 years. So I'm talking about this. I go over to Goatee Records and I see an old intern named Reed Waltz. I have no idea where he is now. He was an intern of mine at Warner Alliance. He's now doing publishing. I'm telling him about cutting edge worship music. And he says, you might want to listen to this. And he gives me a CDR with a handwritten on the CDR in Sharpie. And it says, Zilch, the Millennium Demos. And this was DC Talk's touring band, Zilch, who had done... This is going to blow your mind. I love that you're going to hear this for the first time. So this is Zilch's touring band. They took on...
DC Talk's touring band.
Yeah, I'm sorry. DC Talk's touring band. And they had gone to the Brownsville Revival in Pensacola. And a guy named Ray Hughes had prophesied over this group. They all fell on the floor. They all are crying. And he says, God is about to pour out through you a sonic flood of worship all over the universe, all over the world. And they got up and they said, our new name is Sonic Flood.
Amazing. I had no idea about that.
but I have the 5-song demo of Zilch, the Millennium Demos. And this thing, like everything that I've been saying about cutting edge worship music, went up about 100 notches.
Wow.
With this record. Mm-hmm. And so I start making cassettes. I don't have a CD duplicator. I start making cassettes of this 5-song thing. I hand out 200 cassettes.
No.
Way, way not legal. But all I could do is talk about this new Zilch / Sonic Flood record that's going to be coming from Goatee sometime next year.
Wow.
By the time I meet the Sonic Flood guys in early 99, I walk up to them completely, completely.
Fanboying.
Fanboying. And I said, my name is Chris Hauser. They almost tackle me. They say, everywhere we go, we try to explain who we are. And they say, oh yeah, Chris Hauser's already played your music for me. The record's not out, but they have a cassette of the 5-song demo because I can't stop talking about it.
Did the cassette say, this is Zilch?
It might have.
Or, were they called Sonic Flood at that point?
They were by early 99. I'm not sure if they were in the fall of 98, though.
So do you know our history with Ray Hughes?
You may not. Maybe not.
Ray is all over the Writing Worship book.
Got it.
Chrissy went to a Ray Hughes at Belmont Church. He was speaking there, and they were literally just floored by his storytelling because he told the stories of David and also music from around the world. And anyway, just how God is in all of that. And we ended up going on 2 trips with Ray to Scotland Ireland to just ingest the history. And in July of 2020, we were planning a huge Nashville, the spiritual history of Nashville. I was planning it with Ray. And anyway, but that's, I had no idea that he prophesied over that band.
Yes.
Yeah, that's crazy.
The deal is, yes, we had some success with Daryl in 98 and 99, a little bit with Lincoln, but really early 99, when Sonic Flood, I Want to Know You, the Jeff Searles song from the Vineyard Movement, when that hit radio, I was sitting in, I brought Daryl Evans to KLTY in Dallas with John Rivers, and I sat with John Rivers in his office, and I said, have you heard the new Sonic Flood record? He goes, nope. Mm-hmm. I said, I'm sure it's somewhere in your stack. Because back then it was still a stack of CDs.
Right.
And I went through the stack and I found the Sonic Flood and I put it in and I played it. And it sounded like pop radio.
Yeah.
It was a perfect modern rock pop radio song. Mm-hmm. And he said, that's a hit.
Mm-hmm.
And he started playing it that week.
Now, were you promoting them?
Yes.
Okay.
Goatee hired me for that.
Oh, they better have. They better have. I mean.
So I really see that as the launch.
Yeah.
The real bomb that went off for worship music on the radio really was early 99 with Sonic Flood.
And talk about what you saw happening. I think it changed the church as well.
Yes.
In terms of how music was presented. Before that, it was Lord, I Lift Your Name on High, and I don't even remember.
Which was contemporary for, you know, in a
Shout
sense.
To the Lord,
Shout
even
to
at
the
that
Lord.
Time.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that was, and that was pretty revolutionary. But these were, radio began impacting what churches were singing.
Yes.
I thought.
Yeah, absolutely.
By these songs.
Yeah, and it goes back and forth over the years. But it's quite tongue in cheek, but there are times I'll walk into a group and I'll tell that story and I'm either saying you're welcome or I'm sorry because people have strong feelings about worship music on the radio.
Yeah. What are your feelings about it?
I think it's overblown in a sense of some people will say that's all radio plays now. It's all Christian radio plays. And it's really, truly not the case. It is not the case.
Either.
When you look at the chart, a top 30 chart, there are usually no more than 4 or 5 vertical lyric songs in any given week in the current top 30 playlist.
Mm-hmm.
And so to say that it's all worship would be 80 or 90% of the chart. It would be 25 songs. It's not that. Now, it gives people the impression that it's there. But what happened is in 2000, I sat in on a little research test at WayFM here in Nashville, And they were testing out, they were playing songs on the phone for their biggest listeners, for their most hardcore listeners. And in the summer of 2000, their six of their top 10 songs that were researching then were vertical lyric songs.
Okay.
Four of those were Sonic Flood songs.
Huh. Wow.
And so I could see there was a sea change happening then by 2000 when the early numbers were coming back, when they were really tying into the audience. And the audience was saying, I want to have, I'm not waiting for Wednesday night or Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. I need a moment with God right now in my car, doing dishes,
yeah,
putting the kids to sleep. I need a moment that helps me commune with God.
Right, right.
And they were finding that finally on radio. Yep.
What other worship songs have you worked since 2000, since Sonic Flood? Name some, you have just some stories.
Chris Tomlin,
mm-hmm,
a number of Chris Tomlin songs. Our God in 2010 was, that's a memorable one for me, mm, that I worked.
Why is that?
Chris Tomlin sent me the first edition of iPad as a gift. I remember because he sent me a gift. And that
he
was,
gave you an iPad.
He gave me an iPad.
Uh-huh.
He gave me the first iPad ever, mm-hmm, basically. And so that was memorable to me. But that was fun,
uh-huh,
to get that on the radio. I was involved with Vineyard. Dwell was a song that I got played on some radio stations, mm-hmm, in the mid-2000s.
Yeah. Did you ever listen to Hungry back in the mid-90s?
That whole... yeah, dude. Yeah, no, again, I was a Vineyard guy.
It was so impactful.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Aaron Schust in 05 and 06.
Right.
With My Savior, My God.
My Savior, My God, yeah.
And then a month later, we released Sweetly Broken by Jeremy Riddle from the Vineyard.
Mm.
And that was a big charting song as well. Mm-hmm. So two months in a row, I had these huge worship songs that were from artists that no one knew on small indie labels,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
Vineyard Music and Brash Music out of Atlanta. And it kind of upended everything, mm-hmm, in the mid-2000s.
What's your process for listening to songs, and how do you know that it will work?
Oh,
or is it just how it moves you?
Yeah, it's how it moves me, honestly. It's got to move me first.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, I can talk about the hits, but for every hit, I've got 9 songs that didn't work.
Right.
And I'm mad about, you know, and I'm frustrated with, because I thought it would work and it didn't work.
Can you think of one or two?
Oh, that Rock and Roll Worship Circus, mm, I think were just completely incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't really get very far. That was a bummer. I mean, through inner healing and therapy over the years, I used to have such highs and lows,
yeah,
that I would think this is a smash. And if it was not a smash, then I'd be like, I don't think I can hear a hit
anymore. I've lost it.
I can't hear a hit anymore. And then that would devolve to like, I mean, who knows if I'm even a Christian? I mean, where's the proof that I'm even a Christian? And then that would devolve to like,
wow,
is there a God? I don't have any solid proof. That's been all evened out in my life now. And I'm much more even keeled at this point in my life. But I mean, I loved being a part of helping Third Day cut the Waterdeep song, You Are So Good to Me.
Huh. I didn't know that was their song.
Yeah. Enter the Worship Circle.
Mm-hmm.
Enter the Worship Circle was another really important thing for me in 99, mm-hmm, being their manager. And that record is one of the best-selling independent records of all time in, mm-hmm, Christian music, was 100 Portraits and Waterdeep doing this live worship record out of... independently.
Tell me about that, because Waterdeep had a unique thing that never happened before. I remember the label Squint, mm-hmm, at the time that I worked with it. They were frustrated because everybody was recording their records and releasing them. And Waterdeep was great with that.
Yes.
But was that a thing that you had to deal with when you managed them?
It was actually a really helpful, it was a very, very pivotal moment for me, because I thought, hey, I helped break Cademan's Call.
Mm.
Cademan's Call introduced me to Waterdeep. I'm going to break Waterdeep. Mm. I'm going to make them...
just like Cademan's
Call. Just like that. And it was not the case.
Yeah.
And it was a big... it was a very humbling experience for me. I really thought Waterdeep was going to be massive.
Oh, they were such a special band,
yep,
too. Like,
yep,
so unique. And
yep,
loved their fans and knew how to build community. And
I know.
And,
yeah, they're still... very close friends.
Yeah.
Very, very dear friends.
Would you say that you identify with the Rabbit Room? that whole movement, the whole Andrew Peterson.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I love that bunch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those guys are, Andrew's very important to me. Mm. Jill Phillips, Andy Gullihorn, all those guys matter so much to me. And back to the Cademans thing, you had mentioned it, behind the Cademans call wave came Jason Gray, Bebo Norman, Andrew Peterson, the Normals.
I mean,
so much incredible music came in behind the wave that was Cademan's Call.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's powerful. Did you ever work Chrissy's song, Your Great Name?
I did.
For Natalie Grant?
Yeah, I was hired as an indie by Word, or Curb at the time, to work that record.
Do you know the story that... our side of the story. Have you ever heard it?
I think I do. I can't tell it to you, but I think you guys have told me about it before.
Yeah. So the label or the manager, Mitchell, came to us and said, hey, you know, the first two singles haven't really worked and the label doesn't have any more money. So would you guys, as the publisher and Integrity as the publisher, would you guys pitch in a third? I'll pitch in a third. And so we're like, we didn't even know who was working the record, but we want to work it to radio. And so we said, well, sure, why not? So $3,000 went into that.
And I think you've made your money.
It was
money
the best $3,000 I think we invested in. But
and that's part of the magic of all this is no one's got it figured out.
Right.
No one knows exactly how something is going to be embraced or rejected or forgotten. They don't. I was an independent. Sparrow came to me and said, Chris, we need you. Can you hold a spot open for the next Matt Redman single? Humor us. We have no expectations. We're trying to land on a song. We have a contract with the Passion people in Atlanta. We just need to figure this out. A couple months later, they're back. Hey, we've landed on the song. We're going to work on a radio edit for it. We have no expectations. Just humor us and help us get this off the ground, and then we'll call it a day, okay? Mm-hmm. It's called 10,000 Reasons. And so, again, humor us. We have no expectations for this whatsoever. These are some of the smartest minds of all time in the record business telling me we have no expectations. Mm-hmm. We get this to radio. It sounds very churchy. Mm-hmm. It does not sound like a pop, clean, produced song for radio, and it takes the entire format by storm. It takes the church by storm. Mm-hmm. It wins Grammys and Doves and puts Matt Redman in a whole different category.
Yeah.
And nobody saw it coming. And nobody saw it coming on a third single from Natalie Grant. And so this is one of the things that keeps me humble, keeps me open, keeps me, my ears wide open, looking for what's going to connect with people.
I gotta just wonder if you have a spiritual experience with God sometimes to think about how he uniquely made you and equipped you to promote music that glorifies him, you know, honors him,
right,
with people who are really imperfect. But do you ever think about the impact that you have had and that will still continue to have? Because I know you're going to do this forever. So do you ever just kind of, or does that, do you try not to go there because it just seems too big?
Being an Enneagram 3, as I said before, it's a failsafe to bring it back to me and make things about me and make sure that I'm in the spotlight. And so that's the shadow side of an Enneagram 3. And so I do have to fight that a little bit sometimes, but truly is humbling. I'm just trying to show up every day and be present to the moment and be alert and what is capturing me, what's moving me right now. And I'm incredibly humbled by it. I truly, truly, I do feel like Forrest Gump. Like I've just found myself in the craziest places where I end up getting a CDR of the early Sonic Flood demos. Why did that happen on that day? That doesn't make sense. But in a sense, in one way, it does.
Yeah, it does. Because I think you're available.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're just always available.
Right.
And you're always listening.
Yep.
And I think you're a surrendered man.
I appreciate that.
From what I can tell.
And also that I'm, again, I have to go like, is this moving me? So there's this worship guy out of Detroit. His name is Trey Simon. Michael Blanton's working with him, who A&R'd Heart and Motion. He managed Amy Grant for decades.
Yeah.
And he brought Trey Simon to me. And I turned down 98% of independent artists. So all the people who are listening to this podcast who have songs recorded and think, this guy's, I'm going to hire this guy and I'm going to get on the radio.
Right.
No, you're not. I turned down 98% of.
But you're saying there's a chance.
Yes, there is a chance. There's a 2% chance. But even though, even if I say, yeah, I'll take your record on, there's no promise that it's going to blow up, right?
I mean, sure.
Again, I have more misses than I have hits. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he sends me this song. It's called Crosses, and it lays me out flat. Angels come in the room. They flap their wings. I weep gently. Uh-huh. I clean myself up. Mm-hmm. I send it to another guy, trusted promoter.
No more cassettes?
No more cassettes. It's all MP3s. It's all digital. I said, am I crazy or is there something here?
Yeah.
And he's like, he listens to it and he's like, yeah, there's something here.
Yeah.
So we're now bringing this to radio.
Independent.
And, yep. Independent artist. But I have to be moved by it. Mm-hmm. And then I have to know, I have to like the person. I have to respect the artist and the people that are, he's put around them. Waterdeep had the greatest thing said to me as their manager in the early days. They said, we've endeavored to always surround ourselves with people who love us for our soul more than our gift. We endeavor to surround ourselves with people who love us for our souls more than our gifts. Because you and I have been around artists who've surrounded themselves with people who love them for their gifts. And when the gift runs out, when the gift stumbles, people scatter.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the artist's heart, which is the most important thing in all of this.
Yeah.
That shatters, shipwrecked. Mm-hmm. We've watched it over decades.
Oh yeah.
And so
we're keeping a therapy industry in business.
Yeah, that's right. So I'm all for, but I'm all for paying attention to who an artist puts around them as well, right? And so this song, Crosses, is very, very special. And it's brutal, and it's intense, and it's honest. And the guy from K-Love this week said, someone's got to play this. I don't know who, but someone had better play this. And maybe it's us, because this song needs to be, these things need to be said.
I have two more questions for you. And I guess I'll start with related to Crosses. What is it about? What is he saying in that song? I don't know that song.
Yep.
Is it available for streaming now?
I'll send you a YouTube, unlisted YouTube link for you to hear it.
I would love to.
Maybe we sit down and listen to it right after the show.
Maybe we will.
Yeah.
Is this what he's saying? Kind of, what is it about it that we need to hear?
He starts by saying, I'm a mess. He's got a great voice. I'm a mess. I'm confused. I'm hurting. God, why did you put this thing in my heart? Why did you put this vision in my heart for me to just let it go? The chorus says, I don't want to be angry at God. Don't want to be angry anymore. I'll put this on your shoulders. You've carried crosses before.
Mm.
That's not something that's, it's not happy clappy.
Nope.
And it's not positive and encouraging.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a thing that all of us experience at one time or another.
Mm-hmm.
And radio audiences, markets, cities are filled with people who are struggling, who are hurting. And when we can get a song on the radio that feels like they've just opened up their diary, like it's someone's reading their mail, that's a profound thing. A popular author says the two most powerful words in the English language are me too. When you could have a me too moment with someone with a song that you hear, it's like, yes, someone else is experiencing this. Someone else gets this.
That's the power of social media, I think, in general. People, things that go viral are the things that people resonate with.
Yeah, that's right.
Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's powerful. What are you excited about right now that you're working? And where do you see, twofold question, where do you see worship going? And I have three questions. I got so many questions. What's broken with worship today? Music, if you think there's anything broken with it. Maybe there's just a bunch of things that I'm just really curious about.
Yeah.
Down.
I'm always loath to say, well, it's messed up now, but it didn't used to be messed up. Mm-hmm. If we could just go back to the way it was before, that's when it was more pure. That's when it was better. I don't agree with that.
Yeah.
I just don't buy it. I don't buy it in culture, in society. I don't believe it. All we have is this moment. All we have is what's happening right now. And I think Bethel Music is making some incredible music. I've been a part of that for 10 years. Elevation Worship is as well. Central Church out of Vegas is doing some great music. So as long as people are being honest with themselves and surrounding themselves with good teams of people, I'm not ready to say that there's anything broken in the industry at the moment. I'm excited about artists like a guy named Andrew Rip, who came up in the Dave Barnes, Ben Rector world in the last basically 20 years, 15, 20 years. And he's now crossed over from mainstream into Christian.
Really? That doesn't happen.
And we've had two number one songs on him, and we're going to have a new top 10 song. So Fill My Cup, Jericho, For the Love of God. And he is in a songwriting relationship with Ethan Hultz.
Well, Ethan has a song with him that I still think is one of my favorite songs, which is Roses.
Roses. I was gonna call it out. Mm. That very possibly is gonna be our next single on Andrew Rip.
Really?
Because it's a freaking profound song.
I love the tag at the end of that song.
So those guys are writing incredible songs. Mm-hmm. And radio is embracing it. And Andrew Rip is one of the most electrifying performers live. Mm. It's incredible. Mm-hmm. And then they've brought along somebody from their small group in their church small group that meets every week. And they're all best friends. And her name is Rachel Lampa.
No.
And Rachel Lampa has written a song with Rip and Ethan Hultz called Perfectly Loved. And it's a number one song at Christian radio.
That's great.
It's been 22 years since she had a number one song as a burned out teenager at Word.
I worked that record.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And she now, and I have a plaque on my wall of Perfectly Loved. It just came in this week.
That's incredible.
And they are making music that is so important and so life-giving. And I will take a bullet for those three people. They're three of the dearest people that I know. Mm. And they love me and I love them. And so Rip and Rachel Lampa are making incredible music. And
that's great to hear. I have been seeing more about her lately on socials, et cetera. But fantastic. Good.
And Daigle. Uh-huh. I go back to the very beginning with Lauren Daigle. Mm-hmm. If this gets heard in April, will this get heard in April?
This will get heard in April.
I'll have met her 10 years ago. 10 years ago, exactly. April 2013.
Really?
Yep.
After American Idol?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yep. She went to a radio retreat, Centricity radio retreat.
Yep. In Washington?
In Winthrop, Washington.
Yeah.
And she didn't have a song for another few months.
Hmm.
And she's just an incredible human and with an incredible gift.
Yeah. We love Lauren. Yep. Lauren helped Chrissy set up her Instagram. at a writing retreat. So the first two posts have Lauren in them. We go back with her. She's a sweetheart.
And she's about to take the world by storm with a new single and the new record coming in May.
Well, the Jeremy Cowart imaging on that is just beautiful.
Yep.
And I'm cheering for her.
Yep.
Yeah. So, and she is one of your many concerts you're going to be going to in the next week.
Yes, that's right. I'm crazy about her. And I love from Integrity. I love Citizens. Mm-hmm. They are my heartbeat. Leland's got a great new record. Mitch Wong has a great record through Integrity. And Bloom is a single I've been working.
Oh, really? Okay.
You're Not Done by Leland.
Mm-hmm.
Citizens had a song called Everything and More that we took to radio last year. And we're preparing a new song this year. And so, again, I make a great living talking to my friends all day long about music I love. Mm-hmm. And there's just all joy in that. And I'm so thankful.
Well, I'm grateful for you having your hands in so many impactful pieces of music. Last question. What's the future of Christian radio? What do you see? Because so as an independent or as an independent songwriter or artist that might be listening, there is a lot of talk about streaming, a lot of talk about Spotify and YouTube as being the ways to really move the needle to get attention these days. Christian radio just seems so far out there and you're in it. Is radio still going to be as impactful? It seems to be just as impactful. It seems to be consolidating in that, and I could be completely ignorant about that, in that K-Love keeps growing bigger and bigger.
Yes.
But I'm just curious. Do you see that changing? Is it changing in this season now?
K-Love and Air One, which are sister networks, Air One, I think, has got around, if they play a song in a week, it's heard by 8 million people.
Mm-hmm.
K-Love is probably 16, 17 million people mm-hmm. every week mm-hmm. are listening to that network. To get a song on there is heard. It's heard by a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And the consumption rates go up when that happens. And so, thankfully, people in the church are slow to adopt new technology. So they still love radio.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's something special about being able to listen to the radio and hearing personalities, mm-hmm. having people that you don't get in a playlist.
Right.
You can make a playlist. You're not hearing people's stories
right.
in that. And we're a story-driven people. We connect with Jesus' stories in the Gospels, and those stories are so important. So people, radio stations utilize people's stories at length and then wrap it up with music.
Yeah.
And so I see radio continuing. I don't know that it's growing by leaps and bounds, but it's definitely grown very, very much in the last 15, 20 years. And as radio stations just figure out in better ways on how to keep their listeners. And so it's symbiotic with streaming and YouTube and radio. It all works together.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't scare me. I just need them to hold on a little bit longer for me to keep a job before I retire. So.
Yeah. When will you retire, Chris?
It could be a few years.
Yeah?
In a few years.
I don't want you to retire. You need to be mentoring some other young men.
I am.
Yeah?
I absolutely and women. Am. I've been mentoring and helping young independent promoters get going.
Yeah.
And be a sounding board to label people. I've been doing that. I love teaching and by example and just putting my arm around somebody because it's a stressful job.
Yeah.
When I started this job, I mean, people can't see me, but when I started this job in 1987, I had a full head of hair. It was luxurious. It was so beautiful.
Hey, you know what? You've got a beautiful chin right now that makes up for that. You've got a great look. And then when you wear your hat,
yeah, there you go.
You're still cool. You're still very cool.
Flattery will get you everywhere and how well I know.
Yes, you are good at it. Well, listen, Chris, thank you so much. For those of you that don't know, Chris, also you are the CMB Industry Achievement Award winner for 2016, which that must have been quite an honor.
Highest honor of my career.
Really?
Being voted on by my peers.
Yeah.
Only two label-related or record-related people have ever won that award
yeah.
in about 20 years, me and Grant Hubbard.
Yeah.
And so to be an independent, it's easy for me to feel small
mm-hmm.
Because the labels have the power, labels have the artist roster,
mm-hmm.
labels have the budgets. I still kind of refer to myself as a lonely independent.
Yeah.
And it's a helpful thing for me to
stay humble too.
Yeah, to stay humble.
Yeah. That. Well, anyway, Chris, it's been such an honor.
I've loved it.
To have you here. And I hope our audience just keeps following you. If they'd like to follow you, I know you're off of socials right now, but
come Easter, they can find me on Instagram at Hauser Promo, mm-hmm. HauserPromo.
Uh-huh.
I am on Facebook.
But it basically is the same thing that you post on Instagram, right?
Yeah, mostly? Pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. One of my favorite things is when you show your albums.
Every week.
Wednesdays?
I'm still doing it. Every Monday.
Trying
to do it every Monday or Tuesday, and I'm switching out 8 covers every week, so I'm looking at new artwork while I'm making my calls all week long to radio stations.
Yeah, that's so good. I love it.
Yeah.
Chris, you're a gem. Thank you so much
for
spending
having
time
here.
With me.
Good job today.
Thanks.
I hope that was as meaningful for you as it was for us. If you're a songwriter and you're resonating with any of what you heard today, we'd love to get to know you more and introduce you to some folks in our community. All of our podcast interviews and guest lectures come from either our Writing Club monthly breakouts or our annual Writing Worship Conference. Check out the show notes to learn how to get more involved with Writing Club, our mentorship taught by our founder, Chrissy Nordoff, or stuff we talked about in today's episode. Find us on Facebook at the Writing Worship Community, on Instagram at writingworship.co, and our website, writingworship.co. We love meeting new folks and supporting songwriters, so be sure to stop in, say hello, and get to know us a little bit. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
The times I've grown most as a songwriter are the times I've had mentors showing me the way. If you're looking to grow as a songwriter, we're now accepting applications for our Worship Songwriter Mentorship. Now, it's available only a few times each year. The Worship Songwriter Mentorship is a songwriting intensive that will help you craft impactful worship songs. It's a course created by Dove Award-winning and Grammy-nominated, drumroll here, please, our founder, pro songwriter Chrissy Nordoff. It's a small group community, and it's led by other songwriters over the course of 9 weeks. It's an intensive course and a small group co-writing environment, and that means you'll be added to a special group of about 12 writers, give or take. Each group is led by experienced songwriters, some of them my dear, dear friends, and I've even gotten to lead a group or two. Rachel here, by the way. We love the church, and we love to champion fellow worship songwriters just like yourself. In this mentorship, you'll learn how to write songs for you and your congregation. You'll go deeper in your intimacy with Jesus. You'll get the tools needed to help craft songs more easily and never run out of creative ideas. Okay, I know it sounds too good to be true, but trust me, this course is a game changer. You'll learn how to leverage your unique songwriting personality and connect with other like-minded writers in a meaningful way. Truly, I can't think of another course, group of people, community that has impacted my songwriting the way that this mentorship has. If you're wanting to take the next steps in your songwriting journey, then apply now at the link in our show notes. We hope to see you there.